I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of TSIA. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. Customer success organizations have been under immense pressure since 2022, both reduce their operating costs and increase their impact on retaining and growing revenue. Having a front row seat to this, I have to say it hasn't been pretty. Typically, headcount and budgets get cut before there's a real plan for improving the effectiveness of the customer success function. Well, what if you could outsource this challenge? Is that practical? Well, today I'm going to be joined by Michael Harnum, the CEO of ESG Success, and their tagline is Customer Success as a Service. This is an interesting concept, so we're going to get the insight engine humming. Michael, welcome to Tectonic. It's nice to see you again. You and I talked to once before, but I just want to get right into it here. Know from your background that you were at ServiceSource, and ServiceSource was a company that would go into tech companies and say, look, we can manage your renewal process and do a better job at it. And if we improve your renewal process and your renewal rates, our service is going to pay for itself, right? It's just not on the upside. So is that kind of what inspired you around outsourcing customer success? So give the audience sort of the catalyst here.
Yeah, happy to. And thanks for having me, Thomas. Good to see you. And yes, that is one of two, I would say, inspirations that kind of led me to a broader view of what customer success as a service could be. And so at ServiceSource, we mechanized and were obsessed with a renewal event, which is obviously a critical milestone in the life cycle of a customer. But it was all around that one event. I was in that role, Thomas, for 7 years, managing the Denver Delivery Center, managing 40 different client engagements with an annual renewals goal in excess of $3 billion. So we were doing that at scale. And so it was very, very deep, but it was a narrow depth because it was about a single event. And then fast forward to I come into my current role at ESG, which I'm now in my 10th year of. And that was a similar scenario in that it was a narrow emphasis, just at a different point in the customer spectrum. Mm-hmm. It was all about selling technology training to our clients' end users. And that's what we did over and over and over again. And we recognized that and we went really deep and we actually still do that today. But that gave me two points of depth on the customer experience kind of journey map. And in talking with customers, there's a lot of space in between that and on both edges. And it just prompted me to think a little more holistically about how do we help these companies solve the customer experience, the customer success problem, as opposed to a point solution around an acute issue.
So again, just playing that back, you had the renewal, which is sort of the back end. You went deep on education, which is typically more on the front end, but there is a life cycle that occurs in between. But there is a lot of complexity in managing that whole life cycle, because it's easier to just pick a point in time and say, we're going to manage the crap out of the renewal process. So how do you and your teams manage that complexity?
It's a really good question. I'd love to say we sat in a conference room and had really great ideas and solved all that complexity and went to market with a 100% accurate blueprint. What we knew is that there was something to customer success as a service. So the first thing I did was trademark it. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know what it meant, right? And so to your point, we began the exercise of identifying where the acute pain was. And when we started, you know, 7 years or so ago, people didn't know how to hire for and train and manage customer success managers. That was where the pain was. It sounds odd to say that today, but so our first service offering in our portfolio was outsourced CSMs. We'll hire them. We'll manage them based on your criteria, based on your outcomes. We'll manage them. And that's great. Yeah. But then as time goes by, the complexity that you reference begins to set in. And people would say to us, we'd like some help. We don't need people. The last thing we need in our complicated ecosystem is more people because we don't know what we're doing. Yeah. And so then that began to lead our service portfolio thinking towards how do we help new customer success leaders who are drowning in priorities, don't have resources, don't have time, with some assessment tools. And so we built a customer success maturity assessment, a formal engagement, customer success operations maturity assessment. And we began to give formal readouts into where your gaps are and how you should think about prioritization. Well, that then naturally leads Thomas to the next phase of, okay, you just told me where my gaps are. That doesn't fix anything, right? How can you help me build a playbook, build a health score, build a customer journey map? All of the things that you told me I need, I agree I need them. I don't have the resources or skills to do it. So that was the next phase. And so as we put these pieces of the puzzle together, you're beginning to see now how our service portfolio stretches out across a customer journey as opposed to a single point in time. And there are several steps beyond that that we've recently taken on that we can get into, but it was really a progressive service portfolio expansion that the marketplace led us to.
Yeah. In many ways, it's sort of a classic outsourcing story, but it's focused on customer success, which I think is very unique. That's very unique. And it sounds like, you know, you started out in the sense as a body shop, hey, you know, I can get CSMs. We know how to hire those people and we can tell us what accounts you want them to manage. But then you made this model of really where you can go in and help not only assess, but build their processes. And then I assume that there's some fork in the road with clients where if you go in, you assess, you see gaps, then you basically say, hey, well, we can close, let's say it's adoption scoring and management, or we can close that gap, build a process for you. And then is there a decision point for your customers around, well, do I want to manage this myself or have you operate it? Is that like the classic conversation you have with each customer?
It is, yes. And I would just say there are, I don't think any of our customers completely outsource the customer success function to us. It's always an integrated play between our skills and their existing resources and their priorities. But yes, typically an engagement that we come into, there will be a defined scope, things that need to get done. And it's usually driven by two factors, Thomas. One is, I don't have the skills or the capacity to do this work. And I can't get it done in time. And so maybe it's a 6-month project of doing, here's a common one, build out my long tail digital strategy. How am I communicating in a digital fashion and what's the human element? What's that strategy? Integrate that with my systems. Like that's a pretty common one. Like we'll build that out for 6 months. Okay, got it. Now it's built. And now to your point, that leads us to another moment in the engagement of, are we building this and handing it to you to run it? Or do you not have the capacity and the resources to run it? And at that point, we would work with the client, make a proposal to, here's what it would look like if you would have us continue to run it. And here's the benefits to you. And in some cases, customers have the resources and the time and they take it and off they go. But several of our largest customers have been with us for 6, 7, 8 years. And so they've continued to have us operate things that we've built and then move on to the next thing.
So, I mean, what I think is interesting about this is this type of relationship, and especially as the type of service provider you are, not every customer is an ideal customer. Not every customer is going to be a good fit here. So what do you look for in the conversations to say, hey, I think this is a customer that we can help? What, again, whether you're just building or you are actually operating, but kind of what attributes are you trying to dial into?
Yeah, good question. If I start at the highest level and work down, there's got to be a commitment to customer success at the executive level. A lot of our selling is happening kind of CEO level down, and that may sound obvious and trite, but we get involved in engagements where, you know, if we're at the director VP level, they're fighting a battle above them for resources and prioritization, right? And so there's got to be some level of commitment to whether they call it customer success or post-sales or account. I don't really care what they call it, but there's got to be a cultural commitment to, and it's not a we're customer obsessed. Like everyone makes t-shirts and there's an acknowledgement that we are going to make our financial objectives solely through managing proactively and doing a great job with our existing customers. If we don't do that, we can't make our financial goals. And that's compounded. There's another dynamic that really makes it a good fit for us. And our last three contracts we signed all had this dynamic. And that is, it's a private equity owned company that has some type of a financial event looming in a 12 to 24 month window, a potential exit, or taking over more money. There's some valuation that's going to happen in that window. And and we can help them improve some of their metrics without taking on headcount, which has a positive effect on their valuation. So those two. And the last one I would mention is there's got to be a customer success leader that is progressive and has a strong dose of humility, right? Because you're bringing in people who, like, were the professed experts in the field, and there are some customer success leaders that they don't want that. Like, they think they're the expert.
Somebody who thinks they're the smartest person in the room, and they're
I mean, there's a certain amount of almost with any outsourcing, there's a certain amount of humility involved in it.
Yeah.
And then the last thing is speed. If nothing else, we sometimes just get hired because we're a big company. It would take us 3 years to do that, and we've got 10 months. Help us cut that time window down, and we're able to do that effectively.
Yeah, interesting. Well, you opened up by saying that, you know, one of the attributes you're looking for is that there has to be a commitment to customer success, right? They have to care about it. And there is an interesting paradox in the industry right now, where if you look at a lot of tech companies, the biggest chunk of their revenue is about recurring. It is about keeping customers on the platform. And there is a lot of competition, a lot of stress there on that, right? To keep those renewal rates. At the same time, there is immense pressure to reduce operating costs, specifically to take out headcount. These are record numbers of layoffs in tech in the past 18 months, record levels. So in that sort of soup, you know what I mean? I see that there's a lot of executives who are looking at their resources and they go, hey, I understand sales. Like, they sell shit for me, so I need that, right? And I understand support, like when stuff breaks, the customer's got to have, you know, and they look at different, you know, the different pieces on the chessboard. And then they look at this customer success thing and they go, well, I don't know, man, it's kind of mushy. I'm not really sure, you know, what is it really doing for me? So what are some of the biggest misunderstandings you see, or sort of the like you said, in this battle, the upwards education you have to do in your executives about why they can't afford to just wipe this thing out?
Yeah, that's all very real in our world. We deal with that every single day, as you can imagine. And part of that reality and the way we kind of flesh that out is for the last 2 years, and we went for a long period of time, a lot of companies did, where we were providing services without having to provide any ROI documentation. Mm-hmm. It's just do the work, get the thing done. Yeah. That world is gone, right? And so for the last 2 years, I've been pushing my team, and we've all taken the financial training and all the things so that we are now proactively delivering, as part of our pre-sales process, a return on investment model. If you spend this with us, we expect this to happen in your customer base, which will have this financial benefit to your company. Now, we can do that in a vacuum, but it winds up being a little averagey and guesswork. Ideally, that's done in conjunction with the buyer and the VP of customer success. It's always telling when a couple things happen. One is the customer success leader won't know. Mm-hmm. Like, I want you to do this work. And the next question is, great, if I do this work and I really kill it and you're really thrilled with my work, financially, what would have happened in your business? Either A, they don't know, or B, they try to tell us and we're actually managing a scenario that is live, that is what I'm going to describe. They say they don't need to provide ROI, and then we send a contact to procurement, and guess what they ask for?
Yeah, they're like, well, what's the 100%.
And now the leader comes scrambling back to us like, hey, can we? I'm like, dude, we've been telling you for 90 days.
Yeah.
Work with us to build a, and it could be. So here are the things that we typically are measuring. And some of them are pretty obvious to CS leaders. But, you know, if you're a sizable company and I can reduce your churn by a point or two, mathematically, what does that mean from a revenue and profit standpoint?
Yeah.
Pretty easy, right? If you have more satisfied customers and they're more likely to take an upsell offer, what does that mean to the close rate on the upsell offer? Again, it doesn't have to double or triple or quadruple, but these companies have so much revenue and so many customers out there that if you're able to move a knob by a point or two based on what we're charging them, the program more than pays for itself very handsomely. So that's the construct that we use. And it is an interesting criteria too, back to your prior question of, if they're not able to identify what financially would happen inside the company if we're successful working together, we got to hit the pause button and define that.
Yeah, that's interesting because, I mean, a couple things I hear there. I mean, if you think about, I mean, you're going in, you're looking at a customer success capability, and there are some things that are just, we'll call it 101 hygiene. You're like, gosh, if you do these things, we know these practices, your customer success is going to get better. But that doesn't necessarily guarantee it's going to translate to churn reduction or expansion, because that is more unique to you. So you're looking to that company or those leaders and saying, what really moves the needle with your customers, right? And if they're sitting there going, I have no idea, then it's tough to build the ROI case. If they say, look, we know the customers to do ABC, you know, always whatever, then you can dial into that and say, okay, we'll build the model to optimize to that. But also to your point about, you know, the requirement around ROI, man, if there's one thing that's changed in the past couple of years in tech, is I don't care what you're selling out there. I don't care if you're selling a piece of software, you're selling a service like yourself. If you can't hang it on tangible financial improvement, then between the CFO and procurement, that deal is not seeing the light of day. It's just not. The bar is super high now. And that's not going away. I don't see that going away at all. And I'm kind of curious intellectually. So there's obviously the you know, okay, churn or expansion or these big financial metrics. Are there other KPIs that you focus the customer on and say, look, if we engage, here's other things that we believe can move the needle on, or they're sort of secondary KPIs?
Yeah, I think they're a little less direct to financial results. But one of the scenarios we often get into, Thomas, is lack of adoption of CS tools or CS capabilities. And so you spend all this time, let's say you're implementing a CS platform or not, you're building capabilities that are designed to meet the needs of your CS team, and they're not being used.
Yeah.
We walk into that all the time. And so it's a CS plan that I did once, and then I put it in a file and it's gone for, you know, several years. We had one client that, you know, 17% of their CSMs were logging into the CS platform on a weekly basis.
Oh.
And so all the things that we're building into the platform from a playbook standpoint, from a health index standpoint, are only impacting at most 17% of their CSMs. So how do you maximize the value of the things and the capabilities you've built? You know, you got to drive adoption and get people to use it. And that can be some combination of bottoms up and tops down approach. But that is one of the problems that we typically see. And adoption rate can be a KPI that would indicate future success to come.
Yeah. You know, the first time you and I talked to you, one reason I reached out to you and I'm very bullish on what you guys are doing for a living is two reasons. Number one, in what you're describing, things like 17% adoption rate of tools. And you also described the fact that I might be talking to CS leaders who don't know what moves the financial needle.
Yep.
I think that, you know, unfortunately, customer success, which has been with us now for 20 years and, you know, with SaaS, is one of the most immature service capabilities within a tech company, full stop. They haven't been great process followers. They don't have financial models that are crystal clear about, you know, the sign of justify. And so they're immature and they need a lot of help. That's number one.
Yep.
Number two, though, I believe deeply, you know, TSI believes deeply, it is a critical capability. It is a super strategic capability in a world of renewing revenues. There's a reason customer success was created. Somebody's got to care about adoption. That ain't professional services. That ain't support. That ain't a salesperson. There's a very good business reason it got created, but now we have to deliver on that potential. You know what I mean? So
yep.
I think there's a lot of help the industry needs in that. So I think that's why, you know, what you guys are doing is a super valuable service for those reasons, because there's so many companies that just have that massive gap between what they should be achieving with CS and the reality of that. I just wanted to put that on the table. One of the things I'm curious about, you come in, and one of the biggest questions always with CS is, what's my coverage model? How do I segment all these accounts? And is it by product type? Is it by account size? Is it by geography? Is it by adoption level? So how do you wrestle that to the ground? Because I'm sure it's not a one size fits all. So you go into a customer, you know, you're helping them optimize this business and figure out what's the right coverage model. How do you wrestle that to the ground?
Yeah. So we have a very defined segmentation methodology. It's a four-fee service that we offer, and we will come in and consult with you and actually do your customer segmentation for you based on your input. The things that we consider important in that input matrix, Thomas, would be, you know, some of the obvious ones that you mentioned, you know, industry type, revenue spend, products purchased, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But what really makes it powerful to individual client is the level of customization that we're able to do around, if we can understand if they have product A and customers in product A bucket behave this way, here are the events that happen, here's the training they consume, here's the renewal likelihood, here's like, what are the attributes of that product? How is it different from product B? What if there are people that have A and B? Does that change the dynamics? You know, do you have a group of customers that are 20% of your customers creating 80% of the customer support calls, mm-hmm. right? Is that a segment, like a chronically problematic segment that needs its own special, you got to have a different coverage model there so that you can stay out of escalation land. So it's things like that. It takes us a good 30 days to gather the information and 60 days to deliver a comprehensive answer back to the client. But we really try to dig in on the unique attributes of that software offering in the marketplace and how the market reacts to it.
So now I'm just intellectually curious. Well, actually, two questions. First of all, I'm sure some companies, you have super complex portfolios, lots of products, others more simple. Is there a sweet spot for the size of company that you successfully engage with, just so our audience can understand that?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at our existing customer list, it's a bit all over the map. Okay. We will work with some smaller companies, and we've got customers that are in the Fortune 50 as well.
Yeah.
But if I had to define a sweet spot, it's probably like the upper range of the mid-market. So kind of that major strategic account. It's a company that's big enough to have a reputation in the marketplace, but also aspirations to kind of hit to the next level. And they've got some real potential to do that, but they've got some also real roadblocks preventing them from doing that. Yeah. And so they probably have some of the pieces of the puzzle. We also walk into a world where the tech stack is, they almost always have all the pieces of the puzzle, but they're never assembled, right? And so how do we make sure that we leverage what you've already paid for and what you've already built, or we make a recommendation that you can, you know, get rid of platform A or platform B, however we work it that way. But that's kind of how we think about it.
Okay. So I mean, at that size company, there is going to be some serious complexity in terms of products and account sizes. So the second thing, I'm just intellectually curious, when you're describing these coverage models and segmentation, what I hear there is a perfect opportunity for AI modeling to basically bring in, we're going to bring in all these parameters into a model, and the model is going to help us think through what coverage models are optimal. Are you starting to see that type of thinking being applied to segmentation?
We are. It does apply to segmentation. Our most recent implementation of a similar solution, you could apply it to segmentation, but it's a different thought. Let me describe it for you. So we're kind of heading down the scaling conversation, right? Of how do I scale customer success, which is a fancy way of saying, I want to cover more customers with less humans. How do I do that?
Yep.
Right. And so one of our largest customers, it's a Fortune 50 company that has been with us for, you know, 7 or 8 years. Mm-hmm. They've got the tech stack in place and they've got the CSMs in place. And they're now trying to figure out, how can I take a CSM from being able to manage 20 accounts to, say, 50 accounts?
Yeah.
Now, obviously, they'd like them to manage 250, but let's just go from 20 to 50 for now.
Yeah.
And so we do an analysis and work with the CSMs to figure out what are the non-customer facing administrative tasks that are chewing up a lot of your time. And probably pretty predictably, we find that they're spending a ton of time building their success plans.
Yep.
And it's a manual document. They've got to fill it out. They've got to put it in a CS tool. Other people can see it. But then, you know, the moment that you put it in a folder, it becomes dated. And now I got to go back and I got to update it because the customer, it's all of these things. So we spent some time with this customer and said, let's develop the criteria of a strong success plan and that framework. And let's agree that if a success plan has these elements, you're going to learn a lot about that customer in terms of what you should do. Mm-hmm. And now let's build the playbook behind it of if this, then that. And let's figure out, for the criteria of the success plan, what data feeds do we need to make sure that it's populated for that CSM automatically. And so between their CRM, their CS tool, and the AI technology that we've deployed in between, we've created a scenario now where if you are a CSM at this company and you log into the CS tool and you see your 20 accounts, there's literally a button that says AI CS plan, success plan, they call it. And you literally just push it, and all of the data and all of the reports are presented to you as the CSM with all of the recommended actions from the playbook that we built behind it. And it sounds kind of simple and kind of obvious of an example, but it wipes out hours and hours that CSM had to do with manual work. And it's use cases like that that we believe are how companies are going to successfully scale their CS orgs.
Yeah, I hear you. And I'm a big believer in those use cases. And, you know, my mantra within our own company is like, I don't want anybody building PowerPoints. I'm so done with it. You know, an account plan PowerPoint, it's just, that's static. It's old. It's labor intensive. But I'll give you another example of how I see this evolving. And this is actually what we're doing is, you know, you think about understanding what's going on with an account. You're a CS or you're a salesperson engaging with it, or you're an executive now engaging with that account. You want to understand what's going on with that account. And you have, you know, CRM, you might have a separate CSM system. You might have calls captured in something like Gong. There's external financial information in news about
that. You got the LMS.
You can bring all that together now into basically AI model and chat with it. And so in our case, we call it our member agent. But literally, if I'm going to go talk to a member, I go into that agent and I can ask, you know, how's it doing, the company doing financially? What have they done with us in the last 3 months? You know, who are their biggest, whatever. That is the future of informing everybody, you know, what's going on. So, I mean, I think it's super exciting future because, as you know, these tech companies, we've been so stovepipe between what the hell is the CSM doing, between what education people did versus what the salesperson did. Nobody knows who did what in the last, you know, 3 weeks or 6 months. You can break all those barriers down with technology, which unlocks, like you're talking about, the long tail. How do you just get more scalable and efficient where you can have a CSM who's managing tons of accounts because they have that type of ability to understand what the hell's going on in the account? It's a game changer.
Yeah, if you've got push button knowledge, I mean, just think of your span of control, what you can do. And I mean, I've watched, and going back a couple of years ago, I would encourage, you know, a CS leader to sit with a CSM for a day, just sit next to them and watch. And you'll learn so much. And they did. And now, you know, to have the opportunity to automate that, I think is going to make a really big difference.
I think so, too. I think for sure. So I've got another little tangent here I want to ask you about. And that is this sort of, again, the CS function, which in some ways is very maligned right now. And one of the questions is its role around revenue itself.
Yep.
And should CSMs have a role there, right? Should they own renewals, right? Should they own those commercials? Should they have targets or objectives around expansion? I mean, this is very much a religious debate in the industry between, hey, the CSM should never have commercials, that's all sales. Other companies saying, hey, no, that's fine. We have seen all those models in play. We have seen CSMs successfully own commercials and that having a positive impact on renewal rates. When you go in and you're working with clients, what are your recommendations there in terms of their role, responsibility, and commercials?
Yeah. It's really good to start with seeking to understand instead of seeking to be understood in that scenario, because there's a lot to learn inside of a company that could inform your recommendation, or if you just lead with a recommendation, it's going to cause your recommendation to faceplant within 5 seconds. So really understanding the culture, the collaboration. What's the role of sales? Where does it start and where does it stop? What's your sales compensation model? Who else do you have compensated on a closed deal or recurring revenue? How are other organizations compensated? So once you get that landscape, my general bias is to own as much as possible. Get as close to the revenue as you possibly can is my general bias. Yeah. Now, I mean, I'm a former college basketball player, known to play a lot of offense, not known for a lot of defense. So that mentality informs the way I think a lot. Can ask any of my teammates, they will validate that. So I like to play offense. And so I just think organizations that can't tie their efforts to revenue on a positive or negative way are vulnerable in the long run. But then it gets into the nuance of the balance of it, right? So if I'm a CS leader, right, I want to be responsible for the install base, the customer count, the contract size, the amount of revenue. Like, I want to build a structure, a system, a strategy that contemplates that I have ownership and responsibility of the customer base.
Yeah.
I just think that's the right approach. And I'm a big believer in purity of purpose. When you wake up and get out of bed in the morning, what is important to you to get done that day? That's what's going to get done. Yeah. And if you have people with mushy objectives that are disassociated from revenue, you're less likely to get that result. I understand there is a very valid argument on the other side of that fence, and that's fine. That's my perspective. However, I've also seen over rotation into owning the revenue and making CSMs salespeople. How you make them, how you communicate to someone what you want them to do is based upon the incentive structure that you put in front of them. So if you over rotate on the incentive structure and you're paying them commission on every dollar and it's too high a percentage of their total comp, you are now changing the mindset and changing the activity. And if you want to do that, great. But just understand that those knobs are super sensitive. And so what I've seen is for companies that I want to own the revenue, but I don't want to turn everyone into salespeople, is, well, you need to provide them some negotiation training so that they feel competent and skilled to have renewals conversation. But then you also have to have a compensation plan that maybe it's not commission on every dollar. Yeah. Maybe it's a quarterly bonus plan that's a few thousand dollars, right? It's maybe 10, 15% of their total annual compensation. Yeah. So if they want to max out their compensation as a CSM, they need to be really, really good at what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But they're also not going to not be able to pay their bills if they didn't make... The point is there's a balance in there that makes sense for most companies.
Yeah, I'll put a couple things on the table on this because I actually think this is an evolving conversations. When CS first got on the table, it very rarely owned commercials. Sales owned all the commercials. And then leaders started figuring out sales folks are living off of renewals and they're not focusing on net new enough, right, et cetera. And so there was this sort of separation, which I believed in. I mean, this is the right thing to do. You say, look, sales, you're an organization to go get net new logos or big, massive expansions within our accounts, existing accounts. You do that. If it's a, you know, and again, 3, 4, 5 years ago, your SaaS company, you're pretty embedded product. I mean, you're not going anywhere. That renewal is more logistics, you know what I mean? It's not selling. So that right. can absolutely be a CSM or a renewal specialist, whatever. So that separation there I saw was definitely a winning play. But yep. I will say in the past 2 years, all these renewals have become sales events again, unfortunately, for a lot of these SaaS companies. So the bar got higher. Right. And so I see a winning model. It's more like a pod model where you have CSMs and salespeople together, and they could be rolling up to the same executive, like a CRO. But you say, look, we as a team own this pool of accounts, and we all are going to live and die by the growth of these accounts.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if these accounts renew 100%, we all make so much money. If they renew 110 or 120% because we're expanding, we're all going to win. And salespeople still have more leverage because they're usually chasing the new stuff for sure.
Right.
And I think that type of structure and mentality is a winning model in today's world because unfortunately, very few of these renewals are slam dunks anymore. They're just not.
Yeah. I think that model certainly could work, Thomas. It would just, you need to make sure that the incentive structures are aligned there so that it makes sense.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to me on the surface to be that difficult to get those incentive structures aligned. And to your point about sales managing this, our largest contract that we've won in the last 2 years was literally a company hired us to come in and they were doing all sales and all renewals in their sales organization. So their cost of sale was sky high. Yeah. They were missing their sales numbers.
Yeah, cool.
And they had millionaire sales reps.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Literally what they wanted our help with was how do we strip away the renewal function, move that to a new organization, design the compensation and the skill set, hire those people. So this, everything I'm saying took us a year and a half to do, but it was just what you're saying for the reasons that you're saying. It was strip it out, purity of purpose, you know, get your cost model in line and then have the CS team manage the engagement. But then, yeah, there was a bit of a pod environment there where if the renewal can happen with the CSM, it just does. Right. If they need help, they're pulling in.
Which is perfect. I think that,
yeah,
that's perfect. But back to your point about the cost, I mean, that was, you know, all the research that we had, the reason that CSMs should own commercials around renewals, especially if the renewals are not complex, is that cost of renewal. I mean, it made no right. sense to have a salesperson managing that. You know, because that's yep. our highest cost of sales. But it is interesting. Again, I think it continues to evolve just because of the current selling environment. It's just, you know, it's harder than it's ever been for a lot of traditional SaaS companies for sure right now.
Yeah. I just think like I try to transpose myself into the role of a chief customer officer or VP of success, like whatever it is. And like I'm in a leadership team meeting, I'm in a board meeting, and they're asking like, how'd your last 6 months go and what have you accomplished? And if I don't own the customer base and if I don't own revenue, I don't know how I nail that answer.
I agree. Well, and the reality is, Michael, that for CS organizations that aren't anchored on that, I mean, those are literally the ones that are going away. They are.
Yeah.
Companies are like, look, if I can't connect you to that, then I'm not sure or why I need that. And they're just gonna ring it out. And so it's existential for these CS leaders to be able to have the kind of conversation you're talking about. So while I'm watching the clock here, this has been a great conversation. I really enjoy you coming in. I think you guys have a really interesting capability there in a time where the industry needs this kind of help. So you're doing God's work there. So Godspeed.
Yeah.
It was great having you in on Tectonic. I always like to close these with a question of the day for our audience. And so my question for our audience today is your CS organization meeting the expectations of your CEO? Cheers, everybody.